If I am mad, it is a mercy. May the gods pity the man who, in his callousness, can remain sane to the hideous end.
From the darkest minds in literature come tales of supernatural terror, blasphemous occult rituals, and eldritch horrors beyond imagination. This is the realm of macabre fantasy. Johnny D, pomade for the hair, welcomes you to Macabre Fantasy Radio Theater, radio's premier purveyor of chilling and thought-provoking weird stories based on classic and contemporary tales of fiction. But first, a word from our sponsor. Friends, we've asked a young couple selected at random from our studio audience to assist us in a demonstration of the transformative power of Johnny D. Pomade. While her beau is backstage being groomed, we've asked the young lady to join us. Thank you for being with us, miss.
It's my pleasure.
May I ask your name, miss, and where you and your sweetheart are from?
Miss Sally Watkins. Johnny and I, we're from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Miss Watkins, could you describe to our listeners, if you would please, what the general condition of his hair is?
Oh, dear me. It's usually such a wild, untamable mess, going off every which way. But don't tell him I said that.
Well, Miss Watkins, you know, use of Johnny D. Pomade for the hair will ensure that polished, high-sheen look that works like a charm every time. And now let's bring John out and see the results.
Well, dear, what do you think?
Oh, Johnny!
Yes, friends, to achieve success in life, be sure to ask your barber or drugstore clerk for Johnny D. Pomade. It works like a charm every time. And now join me in welcoming to our stage the host of our show, an expert in the macabre, the angel of death, Thanatos.
Good evening. It is a pleasure to be with you once again.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you back. So, what has the angel of death been up to recently?
Oh, I've been quite busy.
Oh dear, that's dreadful.
No, not busy with my professional duties. No, I've been reading and collecting stories for upcoming episodes that I believe our listeners will enjoy.
Well, say, that's swell.
Indeed.
Any hints as to what the folks at home can look forward to?
You'll just have to stay tuned to find out, won't you?
I guess we will. How about tonight's episode, then? What have you picked out for us?
Tonight, Macabre Fantasy Radio Theater is proud to present a tale from our favorite son of Providence. Set during the Great War, our story follows the tragic adventures of the doomed crew of a German submarine in H.P. Lovecraft's The Temple.
On 20 August 1917, I, Karl Heinrich Graf von Altberg-Ehrenstein, corvette captain in the Imperial German Navy and in charge of the submarine U-29, deposit this bottle and record in the Atlantic Ocean at a point to me unknown, but probably about north latitude 20 degrees, west longitude 35 degrees, where my ship lies disabled on the ocean floor. I do so because of my desire to set certain unusual facts before the public, a thing I shall not, in all probability, survive to accomplish in person. On the afternoon of 18th June, we torpedoed the British freighter Victory, New York to Liverpool, in north latitude 45 degrees 16 minutes, west longitude 28 degrees 43 minutes.
Targets are quiet, Captain.
Thank you, Lieutenant Clenz. Ready torpedoes, prepare to fire.
Ready torpedoes, aye.
Hold her steady, helmsman.
Helm steady, aye.
Torpedoes armed and ready, sir.
Very good, Fouts. Lieutenant Clenz, you may fire when ready.
Fire one.
Firing torpedo one, aye.
Direct hit, Captain.
Excellent. Herr Schweitzer, raise the ship. Let's document this with our cinema camera for the Admiralty.
Raising the ship, aye.
Lieutenant Lohmann, send a message to the command of the U-61, informing him of our latest kill.
Aye, Captain.
Clenz, be sure you're getting the whole scene, the lifeboats and survivors, as well as the freighter.
Aye, sir. I am.
The ship sank quite picturesquely, Bow first, the stern rising out of the water, whilst the hull shot down perpendicularly to the bottom of the sea. Our camera missed nothing, and I regret that so fine a reel of film should never reach Berlin.
The usual for the crew, sir.
At your discretion, Lieutenant.
Fire when ready.
Aye!
Sir, Wireless Room reports that they've been experiencing intermittent trouble raising fleet command for several hours, and now it seems the system has failed entirely.
Raise the ship. We shall investigate.
Sir, it appears we picked up a stowaway of sorts. This dark-skinned lad, Italian or Greek, must have been one of the Victory's crew. He got tangled up in the wireless and damaged the antenna. We can't repair this while at sea, sir.
One more victim of the unjust war of aggression which the English pig dogs are waging upon the fatherland.
Shall we return to base, sir?
Intelligence from our New York agents puts our next target in our path sometime in the next few days.
Yes, sir. Zedacia, if our schedule is correct, should be departing New York tomorrow morning.
Very well. We will remain here, sink Zedacia, and then return home with 2 kills to show for our troubles.
Aye, sir.
You can hear. It's mine. I saw it first.
Oberboltzmann Mueller, what's going on down there?
Nothing, sir. The men were just going through this dead man's belongings.
Anything of note?
Not sure, sir. He had this bit of carving in his coat pocket.
Oh, bring it here.
It was a very odd bit of ivory carved to represent a youth's head crowned with laurel. Klenz believed that the thing was of great age and artistic value, so he took it from the men for himself. How it had ever come into the possession of a common sailor, neither he nor I could imagine. As the dead man was thrown overboard...
That's it, lads. You've almost got him. Heavier than he looks, eh? Full of all that butter.
Lieber Gott! His eyes! They opened!
Oberboltzmann, that's the holder.
Quickly, lads. Get him overboard. Sorry, sir. It's... just the body. The body. He's moving.
What's that?
He's swimming away, sir. He's swimming down into the sea.
Mueller, you superstitious Alsatian swine. He was dead and drowned. Get hold of yourself.
But, sir, he opened his eyes.
Now, see here. We'll have no more of this nonsense. Is that understood?
Aye, sir.
The next day, a very troublesome situation was created by the indisposition of some of the crew. Several seemed quite dazed and stupid, complaining of nightmares, and after satisfying myself that they were not feigning their weakness, I excused them from their duty. The sea was rather up, so we descended to a depth where the waves were less troublesome. Here, the sea was comparatively calm, despite a somewhat puzzling southwest current which we could not identify from our oceanographic charts. The moans of the sick men were decidedly annoying, but since they did not appear to demoralize the rest of the crew, we did not resort to extreme measures. What worried us more was the talk of Oberbootsman Mueller, which grew wilder as the night came on.
I've seen them, dead bodies, drifting past the portholes. I recognize them, in spite of that horrible bloating. Seen them dying, I have. And you want to know the worst of it? That young man we found caught in the wireless. He was their leader.
This was very gruesome and abnormal. So we confined Mueller in irons and had him soundly whipped.
Please, sir, it's not Mueller's fault.
Lieutenant Klenz, what's all this commotion?
Seems Timmer and some of the crew, sir, were protesting our treatment of Mueller.
Were they now? What was it about that not being his fault?
It's that figure, sir. The little carved head. The one we took off the dead seaman.
Preposterous!
It's cursed, sir. We've got to get rid of it. Throw it overboard, back where it belongs.
Enough. You will give up this nonsense and resume your posts, all of you, or your punishment will be the same as Euler's. Is that clear?
Aye, Captain.
On 20 June, Seaman Baum and Schmidt, who had been ill the day before, became violently insane. I regretted that no physician was included in our complement of officers, since German lives are precious, but the constant ravings of the two concerning a terrible curse were most subversive of discipline, so drastic steps were taken. The crew accepted the event in a sullen fashion, and it seemed to quiet Mueller, who therefore gave us no trouble. That evening we released him. In the week that followed, we were all very nervous, watching for the dossier.
No contact, sir. Unless you count these dolphins, our new companions there.
Well, this is a waiting game, is it not, Lieutenant? At least Mueller seems to have learned his lesson and stopped inciting the crew.
I suppose you're right, sir. Now that you mention it, I can't seem to recall when I last saw Mueller.
Search the ship!
Both Oberbootsman Mueller and Seaman Zimmer have vanished without a trace. No one recalls when exactly they disappeared, and there's no record of them going above.
Undoubtedly, they have committed suicide. They've let their fears get the better of them. Frankly, I'm rather glad to be rid of Mueller. Even his silence unfavorably affected the crew.
Yes, sir.
How is the crew handling this?
Tensions are aggravated by Mueller's and Zimmer's disappearance. Crew seems inclined to be silent now, as though holding a secret fear. Many have reported ill, but none have made a disturbance. Curse these damned beasts and their incessant squawking! Get back to the hell you came from!
Lieutenant! Lieutenant! Enough!
I'm sorry, sir. I don't know what came over me.
The strain, no doubt. I feel it as well. We've been hunting our prey for too long. Come, we'll dismiss this outburst. Let us go below and recalculate our position.
Aye, sir.
This southwestern current only seems to be growing in intensity.
Very well. It's been over a week now. I suppose this one got away.
Men, this is your captain. It would seem apparent that we have missed the dossier altogether. Such failures are not uncommon, and we should be more pleased than disappointed since our return to Wilhelmshaven is now in order.
Hey!
Helm, set your course northwestward for home. Best speed.
Setting course, aye.
The explosion in the engine room at 1400 hours was totally a surprise.
What was that?
The engine room!
Lieutenant!
Aye, sir.
Brace the ship. Prepare to venture outside air.
Aye, sir.
Captain! Captain!
Yes, Lieutenant?
The whole engine room is on fire!
Seal the bulkhead!
But, sir, the men may be inside! They'll die!
Sir?
Do it, Lieutenant, or we'll all die.
Robbie and Schneider appear to have been killed instantly.
And the machinery?
The chemical air regenerators are intact, and we can use the devices for raising and submerging the ship and opening the hatches as long as compressed air and storage batteries hold out. However, the fuel tank, as well as most of the mechanism, was shattered in the explosion.
No fuel?
No, sir. It was all burned in the fire.
Sir, with the ship disabled and the wireless unrepairable, perhaps we should consider abandoning the ship and take our chances in the lifeboats.
To seek rescue in the lifeboats would be to deliver ourselves into the hands of enemies unreasonably embittered against our great German nation.
Aye, sir.
For the following 4 days, we drifted constantly to the south, encountering no vessels. Then, on the morning of 2nd July... Remarkable, isn't it, Lieutenant? These dolphins continue to accompany us? Fascinating.
Yes, sir.
Sir! Contact off the starboard bow! A warship, sir!
A ship? A ship?
One of ours?
No, sir! She's flying American colors!
American? Prepare to submerge the ship.
Aye, sir.
Submerge? No, we must surrender.
Seaman Traub, control yourself.
But, sir, the ship is disabled. We're adrift. This is our best chance for survival.
The captain has given you an order. You will obey.
The fool will get us all killed. Captain, think of your sons. Don't you wish to see your family again?
How dare you!
Seaman Traub, mind your place.
No, sir.
Now then, you have your orders. Unless anyone else wishes to voice objections.
You handled that well, Lieutenant.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. To be honest, I just meant to scare him.
Seaman Child's death quieted the crew for a time, and we submerged unseen. Clens and I usually slept at different times, and it was during my sleep, about 0500 hours, 4th July, that the general mutiny broke loose.
I'm not sure.
Lieutenant, what in blazes is this going on? Lieutenant, get a hold of yourself!
But sir, the men, they've gone mad! The ship, we can't raise the ship!
What?
The U-29, sir, she's sunk! We're going to die!
Where's the captain? He's killed us! Get him!
I shot all six men! For it was necessary, and made sure that none remained alive. Clens and I expelled the bodies through the double hatches and were alone in the U-29. Clens seemed very nervous and drank heavily. Don't you think that you've had enough of that?
What difference does it make, eh, sir? You and I are all that's left. We're dead.
Not yet, Lieutenant. We'll remain alive as long as possible, using the large stock of provisions and chemical supply of oxygen. Our instruments are ruined, so that henceforth, our only reckoning will be guesswork. Fortunately, we have the storage batteries, still capable of long use, both for interior lighting and for the searchlight.
Well, as long as the liquor holds out... Captain, you've been at that periscope every day for the last month. What the devil do you find so interesting out there? What are you looking at?
Well, Lieutenant, honestly, not much. Not since we descended into this inky blackness. Yet those dolphins continue to accompany us.
The dolphins?
Yes, I've grown quite scientifically interested in them. For though the ordinary Dolphinus delphus is a cetacean mammal, unable to subsist without air, I've watched one of the swimmers closely for 2 hours. Fascinating, don't you think?
Terrifying.
The passage of time and the fact of our coming death affected Clens curiously.
Forgive me, my lord, for all those poor men, women, and children we've sent to their deaths. We were wrong to do so. I was wrong to do so.
Lieutenant? Was ist das? Are you praying to that idol?
Forgiveness, sir. I was begging forgiveness for all the murders we've committed.
Do you forget that all things are noble which serve the German state?
You don't see, do you, sir? It's only through him we can be set free.
Him? You mean that bit of ivory you took off the dead steamer?
Yes! He knew, he must have, about all that lies below. The lost and forgotten mysteries from before time.
Oh? And what mysteries are these?
They that go down to the sea in ships, that do business in great waters. These see the works of the Lord and his wonders in the deep.
I was very sorry for him, for I didn't like to see a German suffer. But he was not a good man to die with. On 9th August, we espied the ocean floor.
A vast undulating plain, strewn with shells of small mollusks. And what are those shapes?
Ah, you noticed them. Slimy objects of puzzling contour, no? Draped with weeds and encrusted with barnacles. I wonder...
Ships!
Ships?
They must be. Ancient ships lying in their graves.
They could be. No doubt crushed by the immense pressure of this depth. Unlike our Route 29, which is withstanding the deep sea pressure splendidly. Much like those peculiar dolphins that are still about us. Even at a depth where the existence of high organisms is considered impossible by most naturalists. I must have overestimated our depth. Either that, or we have encountered some hitherto unknown phenomenon of the deep ocean. What do you think, Clens? Clens?
There's something out there, sir. Here, take a look.
Let's see.
You see that peak protruding from the ocean bed? Nearly 4 feet at its apex, about 2 feet thick.
Yes, it is unusually flat-sided, with smooth upper surfaces which meet at a very obtuse angle. Some odd bit of outcropping?
Outcropping? You mean you don't see the writing?
Writing? No.
Let me see again.
Of course.
Yes. Right there, as clear as day. It's covered with writing.
Lieutenant, are you all right? You're shuddering.
It's nothing. I just find myself suddenly overcome with the antiquity and mystery of the oceanic abyss. So vast, so dark, so remote.
It was at 15:15 hours, 12th August, that poor Clens went wholly mad. I was in the library compartment, reading, and he had been in the conning tower.
He is calling! Listen, don't you hear him?
You mean that figure of the youth's head?
He is calling! I hear him! We must go!
What are you talking about? Let go of my arm, Lieutenant! You mean to open the hatch? Clens, perhaps we should discuss this. Let's go back to the library.
Come on! Come now! Do not wait until later. It is better to repent and be forgiven than to defy and be condemned.
You're mad! Pitifully demented! You would have us both commit suicide rather than face our end as rational German men?
If I am mad, it is mercy! May the gods pity the man who in his callousness can remain sane in the hideous end. Be mad whilst he still calls with mercy! Let me depart alone, if you will not accompany me.
Are you sure this is what you want, Clens?
Please, sir.
Very well. I will do as you ask. If you give me that little carved figure, I should very much like to keep it as a memento. No? Well, do you wish to leave any keepsake or lock of hair for your family in Germany, in case I should be rescued? My course had become clear. He was a German, but only a Rhinelander and a commoner, and he was now a potentially dangerous madman. So, as he climbed the ladder, I went to the levers and opened the machinery which sent him to his death. After I saw that he was no longer in the boat, I threw the searchlight around the water in an effort to obtain one last glimpse of him. I did not, however, succeed in finding my late companion, for the dolphins were massed thickly and obscuringly around the conning tower. The events that follow, I know, will test the credulity of whomever shall find this manuscript. The next day, the U-29 came to rest in a paved plaza of a vast and ancient sunken city close to the rocky wall of a sunken valley. The dolphins had disappeared, and what I was able to see now on one side of the ship was an extended and elaborate array of ruined edifices, all in various stages of preservation. The general plan was of a large city at the bottom of a narrow valley. I recalled what Clens, in his drunken madness, had said one evening.
There occurred portentous earthquakes and floods, and one grievous day and night befell them, when the whole body of their warriors was swallowed up by the earth, and the island of Atlantis, in like manner, was swallowed up by the sea and vanished.
I had rebuked his foolishness, and yet, if my eyes are to be trusted, this must be the Atlantis I had formerly believed to be largely a myth. On the other side of the ship, I was confronted by a richly ornate and perfectly preserved facade of a great temple, hollowed from the solid rock surface. In the center yawns a great open door, reached by an impressive flight of steps, and surrounded by exquisite carvings like the figures of Bacchanals, in adoration of a radiant god. Something about this carven deity's aspect was familiar to me, but I could not place it. I resolved to explore this dead city that would become my grave. Over the next 3 days, I fashioned a deep-sea diving suit of joined metal, equipped with a portable light and air regenerator. On 16th August, I effected an exit from the U-29 and laboriously made my way through the ruined and mud-chalked streets of the ancient city. I gleaned a wealth of archaeological lore from sculptures and from coins, enough to surmise that this had been a culture in the full noon of glory, when cave dwellers roamed Europe and the Nile flowed unwatched to the sea. On the 17th, I was disappointed to see that the materials needed to replenish my portable light had perished in the mutiny of July. Not letting this deter me, I set the searchlight beam upon the great doorway of the temple, at the top of that mighty staircase, and again exited the U-29.
When I reached the summit, I was dismayed that nothing of the interior of that titanic structure was illuminated by the searchlight beam as the shaft of light entered the doorway at an upward angle. As I stood peering into the dark, the temple drew me more and more, and I feared its aqueous abysses with a blind and mounting terror.
Returning to the submarine, I turned off the lights and sat thinking in the dark. Saturday, the 18th, I spent in total darkness, tormented by thoughts and memories that threatened to overcome my German will.
Come and be mad whilst he still calls with mercy!
It's cursed, sir. We've got to get rid of it. Throw it overboard back where it belongs.
Were they right? Were we? Am I cursed? I considered euthanasia, and I examined my automatic pistol. I thought, too, of my sons at home in the fatherland. I couldn't help being saddened that I should never see them again. I must have drifted off to sleep, for I awoke yesterday, gripped by another terrifying realization. The head of the radiant god in the sculptures on the rock temple is the same as that carven bit of ivory which the dead sailor brought from the sea and which poor Clens carried back into the sea. I must be careful how I accord my waking today, for I am unstrung, and much hallucination is necessarily mixed with fact. I cannot trust my senses. I believe that I can see a light coming in through the portholes of U-29 and illuminating the interior. For as I scan my surroundings through the periscope, I see the door and windows of the undersea temple, hewn from the rocky hill, vividly aglow with a flickering radiance, as from a mighty altar flame far within. My impulse to visit and enter the temple has now become an inexplicable and imperious command, which ultimately cannot be denied. I have prepared my diving suit, and I shall seal this manuscript in a bottle and entrust it to the sea as I leave the U-29 forever. I have no fear. What I have seen cannot be true, and I know that this madness will, at most, lead only to suffocation when my air is gone. This demonic laughter which I hear as I write comes only from my own weakening brain. So I will carefully don my diving suit and walk boldly up the steps into that primal shrine, that silent secret of unfathomed waters and uncounted years.
Ancient and forgotten gods lurking below the seas. Chills one to imagine it, wouldn't you say?
It certainly does. So, what have you got picked out for us next week?
A wonderful tale of the weird as we follow a young couple, full of life, tragically crossing paths with a beastly practitioner of black magic, with terrible results. You'll want to join us again next week when we bring you Somerset Maugham's The Magician.
This has been Macabre Fantasy Radio Theatre's production of H.P. Lovecraft's The Temple. Brought to you by our sponsor, Johnny D. Pomade, for that polished high sheen look that works like a charm every time.
The Temple was produced and adapted for radio by David Milano. Music was by Kevin MacLeod. Playback by Sarah Huffman. Recording by Heldrich Castillo. Featured in our performance were Sean Crosby, Stephen Daly, Jennifer Knighton, David Milano, Graydon Schlichter, and Seth Tigerson. Tune in next week for Somerset Maugham's The Magician.
Join us online at macabrefantasy.com.